I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. ROCA has opened its doors in Baltimore. It's a program for violent repeat offenders from some of the most crime-ridden and poverty-stricken neighborhoods in our city. Armed with a list of 180 high-risk young men, ROCA workers talk to these men and offer them a chance to change the trajectory of their lives. ROCA has been successful in Boston. Can it work here? Today on Midday, my guests are Molly Baldwin, the founder of ROCA, and Tyrone Roper, the deputy director of the mayor's office for criminal justice. Plus, Rockin' in the Renaissance. We'll have a mini concert of music for lute by the lute virtuoso Ron McFarlane. That's all coming up on Midday, right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Since July, a team of outreach workers clad in purple shirts have been on the streets of Baltimore in pursuit of 180 at-risk young men in our city. They are considered at-risk because of their involvement in the drug trade and gangs. The outreach workers are with ROCA, a new program which aims to help these men turn their lives around. Some of them are among the most violent criminals in our city, and in many cases, ROCA workers have to have multiple interactions with them before they are persuaded to be part of the program. ROCA means rock in Spanish. Over the last three decades, the ROCA program has helped to disrupt the cycle of violence and incarceration across 21 communities in Massachusetts. The program is a nationally recognized model of how behavioral health, education, job training, and engagement can successfully transform the lives of those who are often caught in a perpetual cycle of poverty and crime. Mayor Catherine Pugh has secured nearly $17 million in mostly private donations, which will allow the program to proceed for 4 years. The mayor's Office of Criminal Justice oversees the program. ROCA has worked in Boston. Will it work here? We are a city with a lot of grassroots organizations whose work is focused on anti-violence and community engagement. Why import ROCA from Boston? A little later, we'll be joined by Tyrone Roper of the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice. But first, a conversation with the Baltimore native who started the ROCA program in Massachusetts way back in 1988. Molly Baldwin joins me today in Studio A. It's nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
We are streaming our conversation with Molly Baldwin, and we'll continue to stream it with Tyrone Roper on the WYPR Facebook page. And a little bit later, we'll take your calls, your emails, and your comments. So, Molly, give us an outline of how ROCA works. You've been doing this work for some 30 years in the Boston area. What's the premise behind it?
Well, first of all, we feel really lucky and privileged and honored to be here working in Baltimore with the young men and with our partners. What we learned a long time ago is that there are lots of young people with lots of issues. There are lots of young men struggling with different issues around violence prevention and violence. But there are some young people who just are not ready, willing, and able to participate in programs, go to a job, or show up regularly. Excuse me. And our kind of lane, if you will, is to work with that group who's involved with the criminal justice system. They have sort of serious felony charges. And then the other key part is that they're not ready, willing, and able. So if they could go to, for example, one of the city's great job training programs, or go to a GED program and show up every day, or they're willing to kind of go to a leadership program or go to a job, they should be there. And so what we've done is we've really built a methodology sort of using really we've kind of created a model based on several different evidence-based practices around criminal justice, behavioral health, restorative justice, transitional employment, really looking at what does it take to help a young person who is hurt, who is angry, who is really struggling to show up, learn that they have choices and to be able to follow through on those choices over long periods of time so that they ultimately can stay alive, that they can get out of harm's way, stop committing crimes, and also go to work. And so that's really the methodology of the program.
And the word that comes up often when you talk about this program is relentless.
Yes.
Meaning that you go, you identify one of these young men. There's 180 of them on the list so far here in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. You knock on the door, and that door often gets slammed in the face of the ROCA
yes.
worker. But that's not the last time that that knock happens.
No. We're on it, and we're accountable. So if a young person sort of said, yeah, hey, wow, it's great to meet you, I'm ready to go, let's go to the program, they probably could be in another program. And we've met a few young people already in the beginning who are really ready to be participating in a different and higher level, and we've gotten them there. So relentless is a word that sort of we sort of got anointed with. It's really stalking. We just kind of go after young people. We really know that, you know, every young person matters. And sometimes they don't know that, which is really tragic. And if we're going to work with a group who's not ready, willing, and able, we have to go to them over and over again. Often, you know, how it starts, we get handed a name from the police department, probation, Department of Juvenile Services, the mayor's office of criminal justice. We get a name and an address, maybe a number, maybe the address is right, maybe not, and we go meet them. They're not mandated to be with us. And so we'll go and knock on the door, and sometimes nobody's there. Sometimes young people are, they'll pretend they're somebody else, or they'll watch out the window. I think we sort of, in Massachusetts, we were tracking it once. I think we averaged like 8 door knocks before somebody would even say who they were. And then we could, you know, tell them about the program, and they sort of just think it's all a little odd because we keep coming back and leaving cards and saying hello. And then they sort of begin to talk with us. We do have a center, a place where we bring young people. But we mostly are bringing them in the beginning as opposed to them bringing themselves. And we try to get them in there, help them, you know, begin to build a relationship with them, what's going on. Sometimes it's because they have court issues and we can help them work through that. Lots of young people, they want a job. They don't really have the skills to show up. So we have a bunch of programming around that. But that's that where that relentless is. There's also the brain science is telling us that it takes young adults about 18 to 24 months to make any sustained behavior change. So not only in the beginning do they want nothing to do with us, often in the middle they'll get, you know, early on they'll get mad at us and they hate us and this is stupid because we're pushing them to think differently, to learn what they think and feel and do are different. We're holding them accountable. We keep going back even when they want to get rid of us. And so sometimes they'll get started with us. It's already happened a number of times in Baltimore, you know, and they're kind of moving along and things are looking good. And then they want nothing to do with you and they hide from us. So then we got to go try to find them again. And then we come back again. So that relentless piece is throughout the entire relationship.
And then what's the difference then between if it takes, you know, an average of 8 knocks on that door to get them to come to the center or, mm-hmm. you know, start developing a relationship? Mm-hmm. What's the difference between the 7th and the 8th knock? What's the difference in the middle of the program when they've been with you for several weeks or a couple of months and then they drop out and you bring them back? What is that? What is the barrier? Is there a common barrier among this pool of young men? And what's the pitch that you make that gets them over that
right.
barrier?
Well, it's important to remember they don't always come, right? So, you know, 8 times till you say hello doesn't mean you're ready to show up by yourself. And so each youth worker has 25 young people they work with. We, you know, use these track books and we'll go, okay, we're going to get this one out of bed this morning. We're going to knock on the door. We're going to do these things. This is what I think we've come to understand. Unfortunately, young people who are in harm's way and causing harm and sort of in the most difficult of it have suffered a lot of trauma. And they also just don't have the skills. They don't, you know, have the skills to know how to show up. They don't understand that what they think and what they feel and what they do are different. And so it's really about building a relationship. No, we really believe in you. We're going to come back over and over again. We know that change is possible. And how do we start to build a safe place in the relationship? Not only the center, we're not really running a community center. It's really a get your life together center. You know, how do we start to do that so that young people start to get comfortable enough and then we can start to teach them things? And particularly, you know, over the years, we've learned a lot about this, helping young people And we've sort of developed a methodology, and we have an approach that what they think and what they feel and what they do are different. And how do you give them those skills over time? And we do it in groups. We do it individually. We can do it on the corner. And it's really things around emotional regulation and them understanding what's going on. And it's really that's the huge difference.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So what they think is different mm-hmm. than how they feel, which is different than what they do.
Right. And they don't understand that.
So let me ask a cynical question, mm-hmm. A non-compassionate question,
okay,
an inhumane question
okay.
that I'm sure is on the minds of a lot of people who are yeah. listening to our conversation, which is, what have they done to earn your willingness to believe in them? In other words, if they're not willing to go to a job mm-hmm. training program, if they're not willing to get a GED if they haven't graduated mm-hmm. from high school, if they're not willing to seek help for a mental health condition that they may have, you know, if there's no sort of individual responsibility, which is the sort of term of art that a lot of people mm-hmm. use, you know, people are responsible for their own behavior. Respect has to be earned, does it not? What have they done to earn your interest in them?
So there are lots of different answers to that. I mean, first, they're people, and they're young people, and they're somebody's children. They are all of our children in our cities and our communities. And when you look at the level of violence that's taking place in the city of Baltimore, it is completely and totally unacceptable. And if we want to do something different, if we want a different result, if we want different things happening for young people, we have to learn how to do something different. And so what the brain science is starting to teach us is that when people are traumatized and have suffered a lot, and I'm not taking away from responsibility or accountability, we're very upfront about people's behavior, we hold people accountable, but the brain science has really taught us that trauma really gets stuck in a part of the brain where people sort of live in a fight, flight, or freeze mentality all the time. And so what this is about is creating a way and safety for them to come out of that state a little bit and start to learn that really, just because you've looked at me doesn't mean you're taking my life away. Just because I interpret a life or death threat, that it may not be that. And so how do you help people sort of understand what they most want to be in their lives? It's not easy, and it takes time. You can't order it. You can't mandate it. It's not something you can just fix overnight. So what we've really done is build a long-term process to wrap around young people so they can begin to learn the skills they need to make those changes and be accountable for their behavior and be responsible for the harm they caused and actually choose to do something else and part of a process that makes a city a different place.
Before we take a break and bring in Tyrone Roper, who's with the department in the city that's going to oversee the mm-hmm. ROCA program. You've got about 854 men you're working with in the Boston area, about 84% avoided arrests, 76% of them held jobs for 3 months. What's generally your metric for success? When do you consider someone is, you know, crossed over to the side of stable employment and a life that does not include criminal activity?
So the long-term goal, obviously, is to reduce and eliminate criminal behavior and to help young people go to work and stay at work. And in Baltimore, I think part of the goal is that young people stay alive. If you look at ROCA's work over time, if you look at a 3-year recidivism rate, ROCA reduced recidivism by 30% compared to a state average at 47 all the way up to 57. So we're sort of able to help young people do that. Again, it takes about 18 to 24 months to see any sustained behavior change, but it's possible.
Molly Baldwin is the founder and CEO of ROCA, the anti-violence outreach program that has recently been launched here in Baltimore. Coming up, we'll be joined by Tyrone Roper, the deputy director of the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice. We'll try to take some of your calls and comments as well. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up Monday, an in-depth look at the culture of policing in America and the factors that continue to drive high levels of incarceration of African Americans and an epidemic of police misconduct. In their new book, Matthew Horace, a 28-year veteran of federal, state, and local law enforcement, and Ron Harris, a former LA Times reporter and editor, provide analysis of policing from inside police departments and communities across the country. Their book is called The Black and the Blue, A Cop Reveals the Crimes, Racism, and Injustice in America's Law Enforcement. We'll talk about it Monday on Midday. If you're just joining us today, we're discussing ROCA, a new program focused on violence reduction in Baltimore. ROCA uses persistent outreach to provide at-risk youth with a pathway to independence, security, and stability. Molly Baldwin joins us here in the studio. She's the founder and CEO of ROCA, and we're joined now by Tyrone Roper, the Deputy Director of the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice, the office which will oversee the ROCA program. Mr. Roper, welcome to the program. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You are welcome to join our conversation. We'll try to get to as many of your calls and comments as we can. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Mr. Roper, a lot of folks wonder whether or not there is a distinction between the ROCA program and, for example, a program like Safe Streets, which has been in effect here in the city, and it's under the auspice of your office.
Sure.
Safe Streets is a violence intervention program where folks who have been incarcerated, who have been convicted and served time for felonies and crimes of violence, try to intercede with folks on the street before a violent situation, erupts. Tell us what the distinction is between these two programs.
Certainly. So Baltimore City's Safe Streets program is birthed out of the Cure Violence model. So what Safe Streets is, they have violence interrupters where the primary goal is to provide conflict mediation. So they're engaging community. They're part of community. They develop strong relationships in the community. When potential violence acts are occurring or suspicion of any violent acts, they're getting intel from community. They've developed strong, solid relationships in the community, and they're engaging folks at that moment. There's really kind of three phases in which they could potentially diffuse conflict. Either the early on, there's a midpoint where a conflict may have occurred, and then on the back end, really try to prevent any retaliation. It's a number of things that make the programs very distinctly different. Safe Streets doesn't provide a level of case management, door knocking, being very intentional about going to individuals' home, but it's a strong complement to the ROCA program, as well as the ROCA program is a strong complement to the Safe Streets Baltimore program. The two programs are, again, distinctly different in how they function and operate.
And Molly Baldwin, The estimate for the cost of this program for 4 years is $17 million. That's a lot of money. And, of course, with any program, people wonder, is this the best way to spend the resources that are limited? Now, in this case, most of that funding has come from private sources. Mayor Pugh has gone to foundations and corporations and asked them to fund the program. But why does it cost so much? What does that money pay for?
So in the United States, it costs anywhere from $30,000 to $60,000 or $75,000 a year to incarcerate someone. If you look at the loss of an early life, if you look at policing costs, community costs, hospital costs, it goes up in the millions. And so it's about, for a four-year, for one person, it's about $32,000 over 4 years. It's more expensive in the first 2 years. And what we're doing is sort of a full-on engagement of outreach, working on behavior change, educational and employment skills, and a solid partnership model, not only with Safe Streets, which is critical, but with a whole range of criminal justice partners. And so that's where the cost comes. So in that light, it really puts a different look at it.
But it costs that much, $17 million. I mean, I buy your argument that it's probably less than, the alternative.
Right.
But it's still a lot of money. I mean, this is going to paying for staff? How big is the staff? And this will hopefully have how many people ultimately engaged in the program? Right now, I understand it's about 50 because you just started, right?
Right. We just started. We will serve intensively 100 young men this year. We modeled the program up to 300 in the intensive phases of year one and two by the third year. And how that structure will be based on safety and understanding how young people can come together and when they can and can't. And if you look at comparable things, if you add in sort of high-level job training programs or education programs or school, they are quite expensive, and we're actually on the cheaper side of this kind of intervention.
And Mr. Roper, the role of the police in this, because as you well know, we all know, given the consent decree the police department is currently working under, given the fact that there's been, you know, a lot of tumult in the leadership of the police department, we still don't have a police commissioner, although one has been suggested by the mayor. We've got this damning Department of Justice report that came out a few summers ago about unconstitutional behavior being a sort of modus operandi for many people on the police department. The trust in communities of color for the police department is at an all-time low.
Sure.
How does ROCA fit into that equation, into that dynamic?
So ROCA fits in because they partner very closely with BPD. Commissioner Tuggle has been very intentional about ensuring that his team is working closely with ROCA. So they are also making referrals and partnering and attending meetings with ROCA to ensure that those individuals, those high-risk youth, are referred back to the program. And it allows for BPD's image to be enhanced in a more positive way because it allows community to be able to see that, hey, BPD is not solely about just arresting individuals for crimes, but they're helping to identify these high-risk individuals. And if they meet the threshold to qualify for ROCA, they're then referring to ROCA.
So this is another arrow in the quiver, as it were, for the police department. They encounter a person, they can make a decision. We're not going to just book you and go through the criminal justice system a priori, you know, just as a gut, you know, reaction. But we have the option of connecting them with ROCA.
Yeah, so let me, a little more clarification here. So it's not necessarily around using ROCA necessarily as a diversionary program, because some of these youth are already involved. They already have active charges, right? So there's things that are already occurring. However, due to the sensitivity and the empathy that BPD has, they understand, listen, this is a young person that we want to be able to save, right? We really want to ensure that this individual's life trajectory is not engulfed with the criminal justice system. So they then make the referral to ROCA. And not only do they just make the referral, but they become part of the meetings and very interested is how is Tyrone doing, right? How is he doing? Is he showing up? I've seen him on the street. So they're having these conversations. And community allows, and the community is able to see them engaged in these healthy conversations as well.
Tyrone Roper is the deputy director of the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice. That's the office which oversees the ROCA program. Molly Baldwin is with us as well. She's the founder and CEO of ROCA, which has had a great deal of success over the last 30 years in Massachusetts. Our number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. I'd like to go to the phones now. Let's talk to Spice in Prince George's County. Welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hello there. I am calling from the BW Parkway. I work with a nonprofit organization called Alternatives to Violence Project, and it's an international program that actually goes into prisons. And the main thing that we do is we transform rage into love and into understanding. And we are definitely wanting in Baltimore City to work with youth before they get into the prison system. We've spent a lot of time in Jessup working with prisoners over the past 20, 30 years, and we're working at the detention center now in Baltimore City, and I feel like if we could work together with ROCA, or at least share our program, it has a major astounding effect on the men and women that we work with.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Spice and Molly Baldwin. Rocca is not an either or. It's a with, it sounds like.
It is totally a with. And thank you so much for sharing your work. We're very familiar with Alternatives to Violence program. And actually, one of our staff members is trained in it and has been working in the Maryland State Prison. So we're always open to looking and learning more about that. I would like to just go back to one other thing that Tyrone was talking about with the Baltimore City Police. A couple things that are really interesting. If you look at evidence of how to kind of move the needle on violence, you actually kind of have to work with the people who are causing it, right? So prevention is really important. Early intervention is kind of a whole nother lane. But if you really want to move the needle, both, you know, police, criminal justice partners, organizations have to work with the group that are causing the most of that and stick to it. And you can't do that actually without working with police. And we are very grateful. We're working with a number of Baltimore City police officers who are extraordinary and really committed to seeing the young people change, to seeing them stay alive. And that partnership is essential if you really want to work with the group that's causing the highest risk, because in many ways they know more than most people.
Tyrone Roper, the list of 180 individuals that you're targeting and hoping to get involved in the program at some point is all men. They're all young men between the ages of 16 and 24, as I understand it. So one question a lot of folks have, why not girls?
Yeah, so great question. I think the best way to kind of preface my response is Rocca is a model that Mayor Pugh wanted to bring to Baltimore. It's absolutely part of her violence reduction initiative. She's mustered up a great deal of support to ensure that it happens. And her efforts are based on data, right? Really understanding those individuals that are occurring, the perpetrators of this violence and or the victims. And data is showing that it's largely African-American males that are committing these offenses. So she engaged in conversations with Molly to be able to bring the program here. So that's the way the program is currently structured, where they're specifically targeting males, because, again, data is really showing that these are the individuals that are becoming victims of violence and or perpetrators of violence.
Let's go back to the phones to Leo in Howard County. Leo, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I just had two quick questions, the first of which being how this program is planning on addressing Baltimore City's present and growing Latin American and Spanish-speaking population. And also, because I'm new back to the area, I looked a little bit when I first heard about this program into the career opportunities. I didn't see a lot on the website, and I was looking for more information, and I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Leo. Appreciate it. So, Molly Baldwin, what kind of work do people do, and is there a part of the program that is dedicated towards Hispanic individuals?
So if you look at the data right now in terms of who's getting arrested and going to court and in the system, they tend not to be Latin American youth. In Massachusetts, we live and work in a very Central American-centric community. We do understand from the streets some things are beginning to shift, sadly. So we will adapt as the young men need that. On our website, we do, when we have open positions, we position them there. The kind of work that people do, we have youth workers who literally go out and knock on doors a lot. They sort of do case management. They're highly trained and supervised and coached, and there's a lot of development. We have a very special group of educators that can work with young people when they're really happy with you and when they're not so happy, and also can go to their house and teach a class. We have work crews where we teach them how to work by doing real work. And so we have our first work crew up and going. It's all point and go work. It's outside. We're working with the city of Baltimore and the Parks Department right now, because what we're really trying to do is teach people how to work. And so it's important to understand, if the young person could go to work every day, they don't need to be at Rocca. They should be at somebody else's great program, and there are a number of them in the city. There are places
I
would love
to go. Yeah, a whole bunch of job training programs.
It's awesome, right? And so we run a work crew. It's all point and go, cleaning, painting, maintenance. They worked on a bike path. They've worked in different parks. They can lose their job and come back. We have a whole rehire process because it's designed to really teach them the skills to show up.
Mm-hmm. And Tyrone Roper, you have a degree in social work. You're a master's in social work. Tell me a little bit about the training that the folks who are knocking on the doors, the folks who are making that first contact. Mm-hmm. What kind of training did they get? And are they like you? Are they trained social workers, or are they people with different educational backgrounds?
Sure. So I think Molly's probably going to be best suited to answer the question around the specific trainings that mm-hmm. are occurring. But to really answer the question, it's about developing that the rapport, right? So there's always the initial engagement. And most people are really going to sit back and try to feel you out to really make sure that you're someone that they can trust.
So like Safe Streets, are these folks that have lived the life, that have been on the street? I mean, do they bring that kind of cred? Because there are a lot of folks who say one of the things about Safe Streets is that they bring credibility.
Correct. Not necessarily, right? Mm-hmm. So with Safe Streets, you have the men and women that are immersed in community. They have solid relationships and community. They provide community events. They provide resources for community. It's different, right? So what helps them support them in their role is that they do have that street cred, that credibility, in knowing that, hey, I can talk to you because of your experiences, right? That's not necessarily true for the staff of ROCA. So Molly, do you want to talk about the trainings?
So we're mostly paraprofessional staff. People don't have social work degrees. There may be one person in the whole organization across both states that does. We've developed an entire methodology that's codified. People are coached. They are supervised. They're trained in outreach. They're trained in behavior change. They're trained in how to, how do you get through resistance? How do you sort of put up with having the door slammed in your face and getting yelled at? We also have developed a cognitive behavior theory sort of model framework and curriculum that really teaches young people that what they think, feel, and do are different. It's actually sort of like a doctorate level curriculum that we coach people in and use and young people respond to. And there's just sort of ongoing coaching all the time because it's a little kind of crazy. Okay, you're going to go find the group that doesn't want to show up and you're going to go fall in love with them and you're going to show up even if they don't want you. Oh, yes, and you're going to do that over years. And then you're going to run a bunch of programming, give them skills development, but you know they're not going to come all the time. And actually, they might get really mad and threaten you and leave, but you're going to go back again. So everything's sort of a little upside down. So we really train and coach people not to take things personally, how to use their self in a good way, and to really work on the skills development around the cognitive behavior theory.
Molly, let me ask you about a concern that some people here in the local area have. Not just about whether or not women should be involved. That's mm-hmm. one thing, and you've addressed that. But also the notion that there's no need to import a program from mm-hmm. Boston. There's a number of people here in Baltimore already doing this work. Why do we need to bring it in? There's a young woman named Nicole Hansen who had a Facebook post a few months ago saying, you know, we already have these things. She and people, she's with a group called Out for Justice. Mm-hmm. They meet with the mayor every month, and she's expressed some frustration, and Tyrone, maybe you can address this as well, frustration that even though they're meeting every month, they're not getting any investment from the city, and now here the mayor is going to Boston and bringing you in. You grew up here. You were a kid
here. I grew up here. So let me say a couple of things. First of all, they're great organizations, smaller groups, bigger groups, some fabulous job training programs and outreach and youth development groups, and it's our privilege to know them. We've met with a lot of people since we got started. It's really clear that we're really working with a group that other people aren't. So that's the first thing. There are just no, and we're getting that feedback from police, from probation, from parole, you know, from community groups. So I hope we've worked through that. I'm glad to meet with anybody again. And secondly, this sort of import, the brain science is what it is. What's happening with young adults and violence is what it is. And we have a methodology that kind of crosses those things. And, you know, it is homegrown because I've come home.
And Tyrone Roper, you all have been in negotiations with Molly and the folks on her staff for several years now. I mean, this didn't pop up overnight. You've been talking for, you know, 3 or 4 years, as I understand it. Did folks from Baltimore see a lot of parallels in Boston that could be duplicated here? I mean, is there a sense that Boston and Baltimore are very different places? And if so, is there going to be a different spin, as it were, a different approach from ROCA here in Baltimore that hasn't been in place in Boston because the two towns are different towns?
So I think that's pretty evidenced in the fact that they're specifically just focusing on males, right? So ROCA came in and they've established a separate LLC, ROCA Baltimore, that came in to specifically focus on men. So there are those similarities between the two. Again, what makes the program special is really the staff that's doing the work. Thinking about the work and oversight that
Because they're homegrown. You're talking
about they are homegrown, and they have very solid relationships and a high level of expertise on our team. So there are those similarities, but at the same time, I think that Baltimore is still somewhat different, and that's the reason why she's pulled together such a strong team.
You know, when I talked to the mayor while she was campaigning and since she's been in office, and I say, why is the murder rate per 100,000 in cities like Boston and New York so dramatically lower than it is here in Baltimore? One of the things that she points to, and it's a point that a lot of people agree with, is that the level of wealth in cities like Boston and New York is considerably greater than the level of wealth here in Baltimore, and that really means a lot when it comes to what's going on in the streets. The murder rate per 100,000 in New York is 6, and here in Baltimore it's 54. I mean, it's just not even close. So what does that, the knowing both communities as you do, what's the importance of that dimension?
Well, I mean, I want to go back to, like, what do you change for Baltimore? Obviously, Baltimore is a different city. We're headquartered in Chelsea, Massachusetts. We have 6 sites across Massachusetts, and all those communities are very different, and there are different issues of violence or drug crews or drugs that are really driving how the program operates. The model sort of is the model, and the evidence sort of works to that. But how it will operate in Baltimore is what we're working together to figure out. So a few things I would say. I mean, I think this question of wealth is no little thing. I think it's important to understand that if this level of violence was taking place in a predominantly white community, it would never be accepted. Everybody would have done everything they could have to change things. And tragically, we need to really pay attention to those issues of race in our country. I also think in the places where the murder rate is sort of way out of control, not only sort of grinding poverty, but the systems aren't quite working together so well. And we've had the privilege of meeting with a number of people in different cities and states across the country. And I don't know, sometimes people think you know things you don't, but so we're pretty honest about what we know and don't know. So this sort of effort of how we all work together is really critical. And I think given some of the things that the city has struggled with, that's impacted that. And I know the mayor and many, many people are kind of working together to figure out, okay, how do we work together differently to move forward?
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones to Tom in Mount Vernon. Welcome to Midday with Molly Baldwin and Tyrone Roper.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Tom, and I'd like to, first of all, I'd like to salute Ms. Baldwin and Mr. Roper for their efforts. I mean, every effort is like a drop of water in a bucket to a certain extent, but it accumulates, and I really salute them for it. I was wondering, Ms. Baldwin, if you have considered having military recruiters on your team, because if you have a 17-year-old, this record could only be juvenile. And I'll tell you, the Marines can turn a young man into a real man in no time at all.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Tom. I appreciate it. Is there a military component to the ROCA approach?
So most of the young people we serve are between the ages of 18 and 24. Those who are under, you know, or 16 or 17 are juveniles charged as adults. So the record is actually a critical no-go. I think the second thing to understand.
In other words, a criminal record disqualifies them.
And then I think the other thing is, given who we work with, because they're not ready, willing, and able, if they could get through the criminal record barrier, they really would need sort of to work through the change process before they're ready to do that. And they would actually, I think the stress would like dramatically increase because they really don't have the skills to do that yet. But I appreciate where he's coming from.
Well, I appreciate both of you spending time telling us about this program, and we wish you best of luck with it.
Thank you so much.
Molly Baldwin is the founder and CEO of ROCA. Tyrone Roper is the deputy director of the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice. That's the office which oversees the ROCA program as well as the other criminal justice elements in the city. Coming up after a break, live Loot. The internationally acclaimed lutenist Ron McFarlane joins us for a preview of his concert that he's giving tomorrow night. He'll play with us, play some tunes for us. When we come back, I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.